Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo. This podcast is about branding. It's about business. It's about life. It's about who you are and how you show up as a leader. And every week, I invite founders and creators and CEOs and leaders of small businesses, big businesses, people that I find to be absolutely interesting and fantastic and offering morsels of wisdom, whether it be on the internet or through a blog or through a book. And we actively go out and seek out every single guest that we bring on this show in hopes that we can add some value to our listeners' lives, businesses, personally, professionally, and in the process, build a community. Collaborate, whether unconsciously or indirectly, and create a ripple effect, an impact on your life, on my life, on their life, and build something better, build something stronger. And while that sounds a bit cliche, I firmly believe wholeheartedly in building something that actually matters, something that actually adds value. I jokingly tell my children all the time, stop just being a consumer, be a creator. Add value, contribute something to the household, contribute something to life. And so those are the type of people that I bring onto this show and are really the essence and ecosystem of the Branding Laboratory. So today's guest is no exception. His name is Dr. Michael Neal, and he's a practicing optometrist. He's an entrepreneur and the founder of Build My Team. It's a company created out of his own real world struggles to find and retain quality people. And I can certainly echo that. He's known for turning a hiring headache into a scalable solution for medical practices across the country. So he's taken a problem that he was suffering from himself and innovatively and creatively re-engineered it so that he could not only create a solution for himself, but in the process, share it with other people. And those are the type of people we invite on the Branding Laboratory, because it's those type of people that are willing to step outside the echo chamber, step outside the commonality of most of society and say, I see a problem, I'm going to fix it, and this is how I'm going to go about doing it. And then in the process, share it with other people, collaborate and not keeping it to themselves. So I'm really excited to talk to Dr. Michael Neal. And so let's not waste time. Let's get into what actually matters.
Am I the one, the only, or are you the one, the only?
I think you're the one and only. You got the DR in front of your name, my friend. I'm just a regular old little brander.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too impressed. Not at all.
I am impressed, which is why you're on the show, and I've already introduced you, so you get to wait 4 weeks to hear that. The things I was talking about in the introduction is the reason I started this show in the first place is that I many years ago in my entrepreneurial journey started to realize that it was community that matters most, right? It was the collaboration that really helps you build and maintain and get steam and build whatever it is you're trying to build, right? And in the process of uncovering that myself, I realized that I didn't uncover it myself per se. I had people that I started surrounding myself with to guide me into that space, whether it be coaches, whether it be mastermind groups, whether it be people like this. And so I was like, what's the best way to get these sorts of messages out? And podcasting was new 5 years ago.
Yep.
And so my show has iteratively evolved over the 5 years, but where we are today, sorry for my long-winded ramble, but it's my show, so I have to talk for a minute. Where we are today is I seek out actively through my agency finding people who are doing something differently in their lives, who saw a problem, who saw a need, who filled a niche, who created a niche, who put something together that solved a problem not only for themselves, but for other people. and are willing to share that message with a larger audience, right? And so that's what this show is really about. It's not a branding podcast per se. I call it a branding podcast because that's what I do, but I do believe that messaging and how we show up in the world, which is our brand, is really all that matters when we start to build a business. And so finishing up here, you are on the show because you saw a need for something, you built a business, you've built several businesses, and you're now sharing that with other people to make their lives better. And so we want to know, my audience is primarily entrepreneurs. We want to know how you did that. How did you identify the problem? How did you go about building something? And what really sets you apart from other people is most people have ideas, but very small percentage of those people actually execute on those ideas,
Yeah,
right?
that's always unfortunate. Yeah.
It is unfortunate, and it's what I teach all the time. I'm like, bro, and I'm frozen for a second, and I don't know why, but my internet's been really weird today. If
There
you
you
have
go.
a solution to something, you have a moral obligation to share it. That's all there is to it for me. I
I
don't
think so.
think I do not think that you should I do not think you should keep that to yourself.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. So, that being said, welcome to the Branding Laboratory.
Thanks, Steve-O.
Honored to have you here. It's a candid conversation. If you've listened to any episodes, there are no filters. We just talk.
Terrific. I love it.
I may or may not go down rabbit holes. If I do, you have permission to draw me back out. I try to go about 45 minutes, but again, I don't want to cut you short. If you're offering some wisdom, let's just keep rolling with it. I always start with origin and intention. Sorry. So how you got to where you are, who were you, and the journey in between. And it's a bit esoteric, a bit philosophical, but it really boils down to the age-old question, who are you? And when you're not sailing, when you're not scaling, when you're not pitching, when you're not doing something, who is Dr. Michael Neal?
Who's, well, dad, two boys. I've got Al Capone and his henchmen as sons.
I like
Yeah,
that.
you
Everybody
giggle.
needs that.
You giggle. And yeah, I do. It's wild. I love being a dad. Favorite, it's not a job, that's a passion. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur trapped inside an optometrist body. That's how I would describe myself. And also lately, as of 2022, a runner. I started running, not when chased, which was a big step for me.
That's funny. You said that being a dad is not a job, but I beg to differ. I have two teenage girls. It's a job I passionately love, but it is a job.
Yeah.
And I actually grew up, I'm one of 12.
Oh my
I
goodness.
know. I look
Wow.
at myself and I'm like, some days when I think, wow, can it get any more difficult? Bro, your parents had 12 of you. So,
Yeah.
in a completely different time period.
Yeah.
I like that setup on who you are. Before we talk about that, I also like to dive into your core philosophies around people and leadership and all, and how do you show up as an individual? So I'll start with, in terms of just people in general, what do you view people as in terms of collaborators, or are these are people that I can use as whatever it is? Just what's your view on life and people in general?
Oh boy. I like to celebrate the uniqueness of individuals. I've always had a big thing for that, to especially the concept of taking people's individual areas of expertise. Nowadays it's called genius, but what folks are really good at, and helping them see that, and then putting everybody together into a team that performs in ways that can really be fascinating and magical. That sounds about as esoteric and out there as possible, but I really enjoy that. I have since I was about 15, unknowingly. Yeah.
You are a coach inside of an optometrist body.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I do think you are. And I use the word coach a little bit softly because everyone's a coach now.
Yeah. I'll
But
tell you
there
what I'm
is,
not as a life coach.
yeah, but there is such a thing as people who have wisdom and experience and knowledge. And if you're willing and able to deliver that to people in a practical and pragmatic and philosophical way that they can consume, I think then you have an obligation to do that. And maybe you are a coach.
Yeah.
What's your take on leadership? I'm always fascinated to hear everyone's view of leadership.
So I grew up in a small town in Western Canada of 500 people. We didn't have a traffic light. We out of those 500 people, I knew personally upwards of, I'd say, 485 to 490, and they knew me. The whole concept of growing up in that area was when I moved down to the United States, I went from an us and a we environment to an I and a me environment.
Totally.
And That was very, very different. Now, of course, it's changed since. I moved to inner city Philadelphia, so it was all about just survival in that particular vein. But as far as leadership goes, there's a Latin saying, Ace or Pori, as the maple, so the sapling. And that came out of Canadian Army Cadets, a program that I was in up there. It's all about leadership by example. You want your kids to be a certain person, be that person. They'll model that behavior, they're going to turn into it. You want your team to be a certain way, be the way you want your team to be. What doesn't work is the opposite of that. Do as I say, not as I do. If you're a leader who does that, sayonara, buddy, you're out. You just don't know it yet. It just doesn't work. Nobody wants to. And I don't look at it as in terms of people following leaders. This isn't a Pied Piper type approach to life. It's about, for me, it's about very eloquently describing the goal that you want to set, being crystal clear about that, and helping people understand the why behind it, then giving them the resources to achieve that why, putting the essentially your this the analogy I like to use is you draw the map, has to be crystal clear. You have to know where you're at, know where you're going. It has to be a clear, sometimes there has to be a clear route to get there, other times not. Then you get the right people on the proverbial bus, get them in the right seats on the bus. Make sure you got a solid bus driver, and then get out of their way. Just absolutely get out of their way. And that's where I've seen teams, oh boy, they just blow the doors off in terms of performance. So that's what gets me fired up.
I love all of that. You said helping people find their why. And for me, I don't disagree with that in terms of the semantics behind it. But I believe that the word why has become a bit cliche and overused. It's in everyone's lexicon now. You can't go 5 minutes on a social media post and see somebody droning on and on about it. Tell me in other terms what that means to you. What is a why to somebody? And why is it so important?
Okay, so if you think about it in terms of as a leader, I want you to do this XYZ. I want you to do it this way. It can't be ZXY. It has to be XYZ. And by the way, the X has to be capitalized. You have to do it exactly that way. Use a number two pencil, don't erase. I'm just pulling this stuff up. But as a leader, I can't tell you to do that. That's ridiculous. It's not my leadership style whatsoever. Instead of explaining exactly how a control freak type leadership style wants you to do something, what works vastly better is to explain the goal you're trying to achieve, a crystal clear understanding of that goal. And the WHY word comes in where this is the reason why we're trying to achieve this goal. So that the team understands the why. Yeah, it's hard to describe this without using that word, but understands the reasoning behind why we're trying to achieve the goal instead of telling them directly, this is the goal, go out and achieve it. Now, in certain situations where you're extremely time sensitive or emergencies, that can go out the window. Go do this and this and come back as soon as you're done. That's more of a military style type leadership, more command and control. And in certain situations, that's what's called for, especially emergencies. But for more of a regular type situation where you're trying to get a group of people to achieve something that is not emergent, explaining the reasoning behind it has always served exceptionally well. And I think part of the reason is you're connecting with folks on an intelligent level. The concept of spoon feeding people and being a professional cat herder and kindergarten teacher turns off anyone with any level of intelligence and or expertise in solving problems. So I just don't operate that way.
Even the military uses a why. It may be a bit more conditional than, say, your approach, but it's still a why. Like, there's always a meaning behind why they're doing something. And you said something, I just paraphrase it, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it, because purpose builds trust, it builds loyalty, it builds an understanding, it gives you a roadmap when you have a why, is what I heard you say. Would you agree with that?
It gives you the map, but it also helps you frame how you're going to achieve it. So, if you want to do something completely opposite of the why to achieve a goal, there'll be occasions where that works, but the deck is stacked against you And if you don't achieve it all the way, you're not going to achieve that one at all if you're going in a completely opposite direction. Whereas if you're on that roadmap, a lot of times what you learn when you're driving along the road is that maybe we need to make some course adjustments too, right? Yeah.
I'd like to get your opinion on something, and it's something I'm dealing with right now. I coach my daughter's high school lacrosse team, and one of the things, I'm a lifelong athlete. I played sports all the way up through college. I played football in college, very high level. So I'm a competition at the core is it's very embedded in my DNA. And I've had to actually retrain some of that idea around competition because as a businessman and as a family man and as a father, you have to understand that collaboration is probably a bit more effective. But there's always a time and a place for competition for me, and it's not necessarily, you just have to understand the meaning behind that. And you're nodding your head, so I know you agree. But in coaching this girls lacrosse team, one of the things that has come up recently is many of the girls on the team don't think that practice is necessary. They see it as a waste of time. They see it as a social center. It's an opportunity to just run around for an hour and a half and then ease their boredom, if you will. And I've even had some of the girls on the team tell me, like, why do we work so hard in practice? What's the point? And I'm trying to distill this message that how you practice is how you play. How you practice in every situation, whether it's in the classroom, whether it's in your entrepreneurial business, whether it's your relationships, whether it's how you study, whether it's you're playing lacrosse, how you practice is going to yield how you show up in every situation. And they don't seem to understand the correlation. First of all, do you agree with me? And second of all, how would you reframe that for these young teenage girls if you were having this conversation with them?
Conceptually, how you do one thing is how you do everything. I don't know that there's an intensity dimmer switch for most people at the higher level folks. Some of the folks on a high school team just aren't, they're going to be there because somebody else wants them to be there. You're not going to develop a high school team generally with chock full of superstars. On the other hand, how would I describe that? The harder training is, the easier the game day is, the better your performance. And I think that's fascinating because you come from a background of extreme competition and performance. You said you had to dial it down.
I had to learn how to
So,
dial the competition down.
yeah, absolutely. So,
My wife doesn't like competition when I show up. Who can eat the fastest? Who can get the dishes done fastest? Who can do everything the fastest? She's gonna slow down.
I'm laughing because that resonates with me so much. You have no idea.
Men and women are different people. That's a whole separate podcast. We are completely different people in every way, shape, and form. Sorry, I digress.
I don't know an exact answer to that because I'm very similar to you in the sense. I started running in 2022, and a little 2.5 years later, I did a 61-mile race in 12 hours. I'm not the right guy to talk to about toning stuff down. I don't have an exact answer for you on that.
You opened with something. You said high school is not a breeding ground for building superstars, and I'm not trying to build superstars. I'm very perspective based. I understand contextual situational constructs here, and I see them for what they are, and they're a wonderful group of young ladies, and several of them will go on to play at a higher level, and many of them will not. That's just the nature of the beast, right? But I'm not looking for superstars and I'm not trying to develop superstars. I am a coach at my core in every way, shape, or form, whether it's in business, whether it's in life, whether it's in my children. I see my job, my power, my zone of genius is coaching other people. That's what I've always been. Never knew it early on, but I do know it now. I'm trying to develop women for life. I'm trying to develop leaders. I'm trying to develop people that show up in every way, shape, or form to the best of their ability. And that starts with how you show up when you practice, in my philosophical approach.
So I think a large part of that is self-confidence, I extreme self-confidence. My guess is that most of them have either very little or almost none of that.
It's interesting.
And I believe very strongly that that type of issue is fed with social media. Yeah, I don't know if we want to go down this rabbit hole, but boy, oh boy, if you want to take a look at how to completely assassinate self-confidence, it's being a, keep in mind I have boys, so this is a little academic for me. It still applies to them, but popping up Instagram and comparing yourself to somebody who hasn't eaten in 7 days.
Oh, good God.
I remember I was at the Four Seasons in Philadelphia for lunch, and there was a young woman taking pictures of herself on this beautiful staircase at the Four Seasons. And it was obviously all Instagram. She had a photographer there, the whole nine yards. And I remember all these weird poses. This is not a natural thing at all, not even close. The camera was here, it was there. It was more of a Cirque du Soleil trapeze act than it was a photography shoot. And I know you do photography, so you know what I'm talking about. This was strange. And then I kept thinking, these photos are probably going to turn out fantastic, but they won't look anything like what this person does in person. You know what I mean? It's not even close to representative. And the concern with, especially with folks in the demographic you're coaching, is why can't I look like that? Why can't I be that person? That person isn't even that person. Do you know what I mean? The people that you're coaching, do they even realize something like that? So if you take a look at the self-confidence end of things, do they have the self-confidence to even attempt to work their butts off? Or are they in what's called learned helplessness, where no matter what they think they do, they just fail?
Man, you dropped a lot of stuff right there. I'm like copiously writing notes down because I don't want to forget them and I want to unpack them. But the learned helplessness piece is pretty fantastic. The self-confidence piece. I will go down that rabbit hole for a minute. Interestingly enough,
This is great.
your story really hit home. I used to date many years ago somebody who was a model and she was actually an influencer. Had I known what she was before I started dating her, I probably would not have dated her. And I used to be like, dude, we used to be in the most ridiculous situations where we'd be, and I'm an avid traveler, so we'd be on the beach in Spain or walking in a countryside in Germany or sipping at a winery in Tuscany, Italy. I'm not making any of this stuff up. And in every situation, we basically had to play aerial acrobatic for Cirque du Soleil and had to photograph or be part of these silly scenarios. And I was like, man, can't we just ever just sit here and not have to take photos? Is there a different approach to this? Maybe we could just get on and talk and have just a real conversation. Like, why do you always have to pose and create these things? Because this is not what you look like in real life. And nobody on the planet looks like that in real life. So why do we have to project this space? I totally feel you on that.
It's
And
easy
it's
because
scary, is what it is.
the answer is easy. The person you were with was very unhappy with the person that she actually is. So she had to be somebody else. And with our boys, the way I describe social media, and this is an extreme position, so everybody take a deep breath. I call it mindset cancer. Why would you invite that into your life? Now, unfortunately for people in business, social media is a necessary evil. It's very difficult to have a successful company without some level of social media presence. But we're not talking about things like the girls that you're coaching are going through. The societal pressures on them to not eat, to not this, to not that are extreme. And then the other societal pressures of don't fail.
Yeah.
No matter what, you don't fail. That's garbage.
Yeah.
The one piece of, if you don't even like a single thing I have to say today, please take home the fact that if you aren't trying hard enough, like you're going to fail occasionally. This is how life works. It's one of the only things you can learn from, like extreme learning from. So on the entrepreneurial side of things, anybody who's an entrepreneur, a serial entrepreneur, is used to failure because how else would you attempt something? If it's a guaranteed outcome, everybody would be doing it. You just have to, when you start something, you have to be open to the fact that it could fail. Obviously, you try everything possible you can to not. But is that what's applying to those girls in their high school class or the high school athletics that you're coaching? Are they just terrified of failure?
It's
Because I'll tell
an
you what, it is a lot easier for people to not show up,
100%.
to just not, like you walk up to a baseball metaphor, you walk up to the plate. If you don't swing the bat, yeah, you're going to strike out, but they might walk you. Now, what happens if you just swing and miss, swing and miss? That's a you thing. It's not the them thing. This is all over the place.
It's not really. I'll drive it back home. I'm really good at that piece. We're talking to
Yeah.
Dr. Michael Neal, aka Epictetus, the Stoic wise master. You're dropping some morsels, brother. Dropping some morsels. How did you come to understand all this? Certainly, you didn't come out of the womb in your early years of life having this understanding, this self-awareness, if you will, this personal responsibility proclivity. How did you come to understand who you are and ultimately who you're now serving?
Getting beaten in the head with a hammer over and over again as an entrepreneur certainly helps.
You
I mean,
failed.
yeah, absolutely. Failed several times. Had a couple successes and a wild success. Ridden the solid bell curve with regards to this. I think a lot of it for me was the Canadian Army Cadet Program, which built a level of self-confidence that was ridiculous. I was able to achieve a tremendous amount by the time I aged out of that program at 18. So the like I was a competitive target shooter, competitive biathlete, skiing and shooting, went to the nationals for both of those. Did I was in charge of a company, a military company of about 250 100 cadets with, sorry, about 130 cadets with 20 staff when I was 16. I didn't know that this was a thing. I didn't know that this was special at the time. Not me being special, but a special opportunity. And that program developed self-confidence. So from an entrepreneurial standpoint,
Can I pause you there for a second? It surprises me that you would say that, I have to be honest with you. And I want you to continue. But it does surprise me that you say that you developed your sense of self-awareness and not so much responsibility, but your self-awareness, which from my purview right now seems less rigid in the sense that a military environment would enable you to cultivate something so introspective. Does that make sense?
it was military and not. There was no, it wasn't military service, but it was sponsored by the military. So it was a lot softer than military stuff. But what did it?
But still nonetheless, and I'm obviously wrong, but my perspective of people who join the military, and I'm not denigrating, please, anyone who's VA, expat, whatever, military, I fully respect. Thank you. But I do know a lot of people that I grew up with that went into the military, and when they came out of the military, they were completely different people in a lot of
Course.
senses, but they were much more rigid and conformist in their way of thinking than they when they went in. And then so I'm just basing it off of that sort of situation.
And that is the case at the entry level stuff. There's no doubt about that. As you get to a higher level, you have to be able to think.
Fair enough.
You have to, or you just don't get past that. And I think it was Jakob Wilnick, that Navy SEAL fellow. I'm mispronouncing his name, but he did a podcast with Simon Sinek
I met
where
him.
they,
He came to Charlotte. I actually attended one
yeah,
of his
fascinating
sessions.
guy.
Amazing,
Fascinating. His
fascinating guy.
brain is quite the national treasure. There's no doubt about that. But they were did a podcast where they were talking about that. And you just, it was specific to the Navy SEALs and such. And you simply have to be able to think. I think
Think and
it
think
was,
quickly, right? Think and think quickly.
yeah, there was a fellow they were talking about, this absolute legend of a Navy SEAL, and he ended up being an admiral, and I can't remember his name, but I think the fellow was maybe 5'8", 5'9". Like he, when people described him in these stories, you expected Zeus to walk through the door carrying the world on his back, and the guy was like 5'8", 5'9", a normal frame, like my size, a normal frame fella, not your size frame or anything like that. And he was an absolute legend in the Navy SEALs, and he just walked up to these folks and just started talking to them immediately like humans and just calm, rational. Hey, I'm whatever his name was, and we're going to be working together. We're going to want to find out this, that, and the other thing about you guys. It wasn't, I am the Lord High Executioner and you do exactly what I say, or it wasn't like that.
All right,
He
get
led
back
by
to you because I
example.
want to hear about you. Sorry, I want to be respectful of our time because I have a lot of things I want to talk to you about, and we've already gone down. So back to you, military upbringing, self-awareness. You said it all began there. Can you continue with that space?
I think it allowed me to grow my thoughts as to what I'm capable of and what other people can be capable of too. And that was the turning point for me in growing as a person, in that there's so many folks out there who have no idea what they're actually good at, what they're capable of. And it is a really exceptionally rewarding experience to help them achieve that.
You said it taught you to think, and if I may just riff for a minute, thinking, self-awareness, and I'm going to throw in a third word, rebellious, because I do believe that most entrepreneurs have a bit of rebellion in their
Yeah,
nature,
sure.
in their DNA. And they're not the same thing, any of them, but I do see that they can overlap. And I just want to riff for a minute and then have you counter on me. Thinking for me is about processing, it's about analyzing, it's about making sense of the world. Self-awareness is more about observing yourself within that world, right? Your thoughts, your emotions, your motives, your impact, how do you show up? And then when I interject rebellion, I think a lot of people think of rebellion in a pernicious capacity, but it is not. Rebellion is about rejecting or resisting the normalcy, the rules, or the expectations that other people have established for you that may or may not apply to you. So you can be a deep thinker without being rebellious, and you can be rebellious without being self-aware. And you can be highly self-aware without actively resisting anything at all. But sometimes, in my opinion, when self-awareness meets why or meets clarity, it can lead to rebellion because you start questioning systems, you start questioning beliefs, you start questioning roles that no longer align with who you want to become. So they're not the same, but they're often connected. And I'm taking all the pieces we've talked about so far with that riff. Thoughts?
I agree with you on that. In my particular case, the self-awareness, I don't know how much of that I necessarily had as a kid. I had a good level of it, but what I've also had is the ability to hear all kinds of feedback, positive, negative, or otherwise, and select as components of that feedback what would be productive and how to and basically implement that. So there's a fellow I worked with a long time ago. His quote was, "Feedback always wins." And if you put feedback loops into your life, into your businesses or otherwise, you just have this constant opportunity to improve. And it creates a forced improvement, whether you like it or not.
You
I
have
think
to be
that
coach. You have to be coachable. That feedback that you're talking about. If you
you do.
want to grow, if you want to expand, you're saying you have to be coachable. You cannot come with the presumption that you have it all figured out because, bro, there's always a bigger dog on the block.
Absolutely. When we're hiring doctors, so my company doesn't hire doctors specifically. I'm talking about our practice. We hired a doctor, and one of the things that I wanted to look for was they obviously have to be a licensed doctor. That's basic. They have to have a level of intelligence, not as much as you would think. They have to be able to relate on a human level to people. And then here comes the third one, coachable. If they're not coachable, I don't know how we work together.
I agree.
I just don't know how to make that happen because you roll into a situation and new stuff is thrown at you and it just bounces off your head without any absorption. What do you do with that person?
I had to part ways with a very lucrative client. We were about 3 months into a 6 month engagement, and I had to part ways because he was not coachable. He refused to take feedback. And whether I'm right or wrong, you hired me to give you feedback. And if I give you feedback on every situation, you have something to counter with me on how I'm completely wrong, then I don't think you're taking the time. I can't be wrong 100% of the time. Let's just start with that, okay? I'm quite accomplished in my career, not to be vain, but I've done some pretty cool things in my life. I'm well traveled, I'm well experienced. I can't be wrong 100% of the time. And if I'm wrong 100% of the time, all I hear from you is you cannot take feedback. You are not coachable, and you hired me to coach.
Remarkable, isn't it? You scratch your head and say, why do we start this anyway? Like from the beginning.
Literally, the question I asked him, I said, let's just have a man-to-man moment here. Why did you hire me? I needed coaching. I needed to build this, build that. And I was like, but in every situation, you have a refrain to everything I tell you. It's always wrong. You always have a better way to do it. If you had a better way to do it, you wouldn't be where you are right now, trying to move somewhere else.
So this is fascinating because we, with Build My Team, we find exceptional A players for our client practices. And we have it done in an automated way. It requires about an hour's worth of work for our clients. But we do it differently. We do it based upon candidates' natural strengths and talents, not experience. So we run into this hurdle and it drives me nuts. I just pull my hair out. We're not going to hire people in the same way that you're used to hiring them. If we were, why pay us? What's the point of even working together? We're going to do things differently, hence the differently on the screen, and we're going to get you completely different results at a much higher plateau. However, it requires that you allow us to do things differently. If you want the same outcome as what you're used to getting in terms of the types of people you're going to hire, then continue to do it the same way. But if you're going to continue to do it the same way and expect a completely different result, isn't that the definition of insanity? And yet we run into this because we have folks that we talk to that aren't, I guess that you hit the nail on the head. They simply aren't coachable. They don't want to change.
Very familiar with where you just went with that. It's one of my favorite quotes. And they give credit to Einstein, but I'm going to give credit to you because no one's actually technically linked it back to Einstein when insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So now Dr. Michael Neal is the attributable resource for that quote. I want to switch gears for a second. I hate that my camera keeps freezing. Sorry, forgive me. But you can still hear me, right?
Yeah,
Okay,
it
cool.
just looks like you're deep in thought.
I'm ooh, I like that. Let's keep that pose. It gives me some credibility here.
The
Every
thinker.
yeah, every leader has a moment, and I've had my own. I've had several of them. I feel like my life has been one iterative moment after another
Yep, same.
that has changed the way you see your work and this and changed the way you do what you do and put you into your true why, your true calling, if you will. What was yours?
I think there've been a couple of them. The most recent, which is really easy, my team had an applicant for Build My Team as an internal, like we were hiring somebody internally for the company, a person that was so massively overqualified, I didn't even think it was worth it. And they, oh boy, I didn't realize how well this dovetails in our conversation. They said, Mike, you got to take another look. And so we have video interviews as far as part of our process. And so they forced me with my closed mind and ignorance to watch this video. And he was a 30 years experience in banking. I thought he was a banker. What the heck do we want to hire a banker internally to build my team? What I didn't realize is he did operations for banks for 30 years. He was a wizard at operations. And turns out also a hockey coach. Now, hockey's my language, but he loved to coach. And this is exactly what you were saying. So I ended up interviewing this fellow and went into it still with knuckles dragging and full Neanderthal mindset. Came out of it as, okay, game on. Just literally, game on. Let's rock and roll. He had zero experience running a healthcare company, like a practice, had zero experience running a software company. Didn't make a lick of difference. What I found out virtually immediately, within days, is that it doesn't matter at all what business you're in. If you have heavy duty operational experience, let me just let you in on the secret I was unaware of. People are people. Doesn't matter what business you're in. He was able to just extremely rapidly laser focus on where the income should be coming from, is coming from, needs to be coming from, what expenses are real, what are important, what aren't important. And the split between profit and the income and expenses just widened wildly. And that was done so fast, my head spun. What it was.
I am fully supportive of your clinical interpretation of that because I was an operations director for a bank for 15 years.
There you go.
I'm just joking, but I was, but yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's an incredibly transferable skill set that I didn't realize. You're dealing with all kinds of regulatory everything. Like it can go on and on. And so now Frank runs, he's the executive in charge of our practice. He's not the practice manager, but he does operations for the practice. And he also runs Build My Team. So the Build My Team does the hires for our practice. We essentially eat our own dog food. And that all started when my team pushed me to talk with him. And the clincher out of everything was the hockey coach.
I love that.
He loved to develop young talent and help grow the young talent. And guess what? In a business environment, if you can get your hands on a person who likes to develop talent like that, just say yes and make it work. It's wild. The results are incredible.
So that goes back to my original philosophical approach when I was talking about these girls that I'm coaching. That is how I view coaching. It is my job to develop your talent. It's my
Yes.
job to pull the most out of you that you can possibly give, even when you didn't know you had it. And that doesn't just mean on the field. That means how do you show up in life? Because I'm a huge philosophical believer in how you show up in your personal side of your life is going to accurately reflect how you show up professionally, right? And so in one of my coaching modules, actually all of my coaching modules, before we even jump into program development or operational efficiencies or how to scale this business or how to show up on social media or what does your brand have to say about what you do and why you do it, we talk about personal transformation. How do you view the world? And it's why we're talking about this stuff right now at the podcast, because the intersection between your personal values, your personal development strongly is going to predict how you show up professionally. And I will argue with anybody till I'm blue in the face and in my coffin many years from now that there is a direct connection and correlation between the two. And I had a coach many years ago that completely felt opposite of that. And she wanted to put my personal life in a silo and my professional life in a silo. And I was like, there is no way in hell you're going to tell me that if I'm a piece of shit, it's not going to show up over here in my professional world, in my relationships, in my collaborations, in my clients, in my my wife. Everything matters how you show up as an individual.
I think I've got a bachelor's in psychology, so that qualifies me to just ask you if you'd like fries with that. However, anybody who has had any level of human experience will know that if you have a solid sense of self and self-confidence in your personal life, you can build on top of that. But what you just described, oh my goodness, you're going to try and build a business when your own personal life is flaming and with napalm every 30 seconds, you end up building a house of cards on top of quicksand.
I walked away from it. You and me are
the
same.
What is that all about?
You're the same. When this started to come out and show itself in my weekly sessions, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. There is no way in hell that I'm going to take advice in this capacity. And so we quickly parted ways. But yeah, in either way, it just goes to show that everybody comes at their experience based upon the experience and the context and all the things. And it's not my job to necessarily convince you that you're wrong. It's my job to show you that there's another side of things. And if you can shift that perspective, you're on the way to changing the trajectory of your course. What personal transformation have you had? I could go on and on for all the failures I've had in my life, from relationships to businesses to just so many different things. But in every one of those moments, I started to realize there was a pattern, and it was always pointing back to me. I was the catalyst.
Remarkable how that works, right?
Yeah. I was like, my first wife, okay, you know what? We didn't get along, and you didn't do this, and you didn't do that, and you did that. But bro, you didn't show up very well like in that relationship. You could have been a completely different husband, and I fully own that. So when you think about your life, what personal transformation had to happen for you before your professional one could ripen and mature and matriculate to what it's doing right now?
Truly accepting the transition from the lone wolf to team leader. That encapsulates virtually all advancement. In this AI generation, there will be somebody who creates a $1 billion company of one. That's going to happen with the leverage that AI provides. That'll make for a great Hollywood story. Don't even bother to try this one at home, folks. It's just not going to happen. You're better off to try and win the Powerball. That's a higher likelihood. The way to success is, number one, you have to figure out how to build value for other people. That's why money transfers hands. If I have something that's incredibly valuable to you, you'll pay for it. Second is once you figure that out, you take the value that you're creating, and the only way to scale it is through a team. Sure, you can automate the heck out of it. That's exactly what Build My Team did. But we still have terrific people that interact with the automation and function as a bridge between our clients and the automation. Because our clients don't just want to saddle up to the automation or hiring automation and do it themselves. They want an expert who does this all day long. They're willing to pay a little bit more. The service is very affordable, but a little bit more than just using the automation themselves. So I would say, first off, you have to provide value to other people. Mm. And second, you have to determine how to operate and run a team effectively. Mm. Build one and then run that team effectively. And if you're not the person for either of those things, okay, great, find somebody who is. But without those two pillars, I don't know how you get a business off the ground.
Sidebar, lone wolves do exist, but they're in transit. They're in a transitory state. I don't know if you knew that. They're not thriving alone forever. They're like they've either been dispersed from the clan or the tribe or whatever wolf groups are called, the packs.
Yeah.
Because of injury, old age, etc. But they're only alone by necessity, not choice. So anyway, I just finished watching the most fantastic show on wolves. If you like wolves, which I love. Yeah. It's on Netflix, and I cannot remember the name of it, but it was like a 7-part series. Just phenomenal creatures. And it took place in your motherland.
I don't know any of them.
You talk about doing things differently. I say when other people zig, I zag. What was the moment you realized that you, as a professional optometrist and entrepreneur and wisdom dropper, aka Epictetus, what was that moment you realized that you weren't going to do things the traditional way anymore?
I wanted
results that weren't traditional. I wanted above average results. So one of the things I learned early on is if I wanted to be an average optometrist with an average practice, I would look at average optometrists and learn from average practices. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? Flip that around. How do you learn from exceptional practices? First of all, you got to identify them and then figure out who's running these things and then learn that. Another option is get the heck out of the field. So rather than looking at eye care and what makes an incredible eye care practice, I started studying dentistry with the thought being that people like to go to the eye doctors or at least don't mind it. I don't know a lot of people that are just jumping at ready to go, excited to go to the dentist or otherwise. So they simply had to try harder and took a look at how dentistry practices build their patient base, that type of thing. And they were doing things very differently. As far as the hiring goes, back to 2016, when I was in executive coaching at the time, and I looked at these organizations and they were incredibly high functioning with teams that were very similar to what I wanted. Turns out they were just hiring completely differently, upside down and backwards. And what ended up doing was over the course of quite some time, built an automation system with my team that we were just completely ignorant. Like we just didn't know what we should do or shouldn't do. So we had to figure out create a new process to get these exceptional results. And what it ended up being is an automated system, done for you system for my practice. And that extrapolated out to some friends. And next thing, we're in over 40 states and 10 different healthcare professions. What we found out through part of this is remarkable. A private practice in healthcare is a private practice. It doesn't matter if you're in eye care, dentistry, whatever the type of thing is, the positions are all almost the same. And so we're able to branch out very quickly.
So you were in coaching before in a previous profession.
Strategic Coach was the name of the organization. They're out of Toronto. Dan Sullivan is the fellow. He is a wizard at helping entrepreneurs not only understand themselves, but to translate that into action.
That's
Yeah, a
great.
terrific organization.
I'm going to look him up because that's what I'm trying to build in my practice. Do you know him personally?
I sat across from him for a whole bunch of times in there. He likes to interact best with entrepreneurs in a coffee shop.
I would love
So
an
he built.
introduction.
Yeah, he built a coffee shop in his in their building.
Introduce me. Interestingly enough, I'm in the process right now of putting together a plan for my own coffee shop.
Huh.
I know, because
Yeah.
I believe coffee shops are where people commune, create, and ultimately collaborate. I do believe that is the idea of this tribe community. We talked about it early on. It's like people need to figure out a way to come back together. Right now, we're putting ourselves and distancing ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think that politically, it's being done purposefully. That's their why. Separate us as much as we can, but that's a different podcast.
You know what? You ever throw a party and try and get it out of the kitchen? Like
Sounds
people
fun.
congregate, they congregate in the kitchen. You try and move a party out of a kitchen, good luck. It'll just go right back to the kitchen.
Unless you start a bonfire.
That's it. That's the only way.
Bonfire always draws like moss to a flame.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, like the kitchen is where the bread is broken. It's where
Right.
you go back to humanity. You eat and you drink together.
Do you remember the old school modern mid-century homes, or even it was borrowed from, I want to say, Victorian England, or maybe even somewhere in Europe, where they would build in the central part of the room? There was always a recess box filled with sofas and a coffee table in the middle. Do you remember this?
Yeah, keep going.
So they built these, and I want to say it came from Victorian era. Maybe I'm wrong. I should know this. But in old homes, and you'll still see it, it's actually making a renaissance. But in old homes, and it was carried into modern mid-century concept, in the center of the living room, there was always a room, but the room had a recess. So you had to step down into it as like an enclosure, like an enclave.
I've been in a
And
couple houses like that.
yeah, and wrapped around that enclave was a 360-degree sofa area where everybody would sit. And the centerpiece was a table where people could, a large table, like at knee level, where people could place their food, their drinks, etc. But the whole idea was to create this commune of conversations, kitchen, this fire pit. Yeah. All right, now that we have the why, we've talked a lot about that. And thank you, by the way, again, Dr. Michael Neal. If you listen to any podcast this week, I think that there's been a lot of things that you and I have talked about, and you've dropped a lot of different insights. And I love the think differently motto. But tell me plainly now, just so the people that are listening, what do you do? Who do you serve? And how Are you solving problems for people with what you're doing?
Yeah, Build My Team is a software as a service company that helps our clients find amazing A-plus team members for their practices in healthcare, their business, their small businesses. We focus on positions like secretarial, administrative, clerical, management, all of those positions. And all of our hiring is done not using resumes, it's done based upon determining their natural strengths and talents. We essentially hire upside down. We aren't looking for the right person. We get as many candidates as we can, and our software eliminates the people that we know cannot do the job. By doing it that way, we essentially find the perfect needle in a stack of needles. It's reliable, predictable, works over and over again, and that's how we find amazing team members for our clients.
And this is regional, geographically, nationally,
North
like
America.
North America. So if somebody in Charlotte, North Carolina, where I am, and I actually have a client for you, was looking because they're opening up a new dental office, and I'm helping them with the branding around that and stepping into this new space because it's a completely different niche than they've ever done before, wanted to hire somebody, they could reach out to you and you could vet and find somebody that would be willing to relocate or from this area type of thing.
It's all done locally. So it's not a virtual service or anything like these are people that are going to show up in your business for
That's
work.
wonderful. So they first go through your process of vetting, finding, et cetera, and then once they've passed the Think Differently Academy, then they're ready for their eyeballs.
Yeah, for their interview.
Got it. That's
Yeah,
great.
we send over what's called an insight report, and that's the breakdown. It's simply a PDF breakdown of everything the person is amazing at, their strengths and talents, plus some logistical things to determine if they can actually do the job or not. But we're measuring all kinds of stuff. It's a field of psychology called psychometrics. We're measuring things like what their stress tolerance is, how well they follow process, their detail oriented, you name it. And it's not, by the way, of asking you, hey, you good at details?
That's
It's
amazing
not
that
like
you
that.
that's amazing you do this. I actually use psychometrics in my brand profiles when we first do a brand audit on someone. So it's amazing the
You know all
things
about it.
yeah it's amazing the things that they can tell you about somebody in terms of how they are going to show up in the world. As you've began this process, I would imagine, like anything, there's an iterative nuance to it.
Oh,
You
yeah.
start here, you end up here, and that's not a straight line. That's a squiggly line with speed bumps and altered directions and U-turns and all that sort of stuff. What do you wish someone had told you at the start of the journey before you got into this? Is there anything you reflect back and like,
Oh,
damn, I wish I knew that?
the easiest one is simple. Don't use email for hiring. Email's a disaster. We found out the hard way. My assistant spent 6 hours one day teaching people how to use their spam box. And we were sharing an office at the time. It was a really rough day because I realized that our service was about to go to market using email. We stopped and we rebuilt that aspect using text. So we just text candidates. There's no such thing as email. It's a complete waste of time. The only folks who are checking email are folks who are parked in front of a computer all day. And in the types of jobs that we're hiring for, those folks are few and far between. So on the other hand, everybody's got a cell phone. They don't have to download an app because texting is native. It just flat out works. So we went from a high barrier to contacting people to the lowest of all barriers to contact people. And that completely changed everything for us.
That's funny that you see you and I have so many similarities. I refuse if it when people ask for my information, I'm like, don't email me, send me a text message. Don't call me either because I'm not going to answer the phone. And sure as hell, don't send me a 2.5 minute video voicemail that I'm just not going to listen to. Send me a text message. If it requires further attention, let's just get on a phone call. So
Exactly.
I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a way to streamline everything.
I'm a huge believer. We talked about psychometrics and psychology and philosophy. That's the core of who I am in my little personal ecosystem. And one of the things that I'm really passionate about is patterns. I look for patterns in everything. And I'm not mathematically inclined, but I look for patterns. I watch people's behavior. I look at things that I can start to predict where it's going to go. And I learn that by watching myself and learning from all of my failures. So what are some patterns that you've seen, whether your clients or your business or things about your past self that you have learned to transform, break, alter, trying to change the space of where you were to where you are?
Oh boy. I think this came from Dan Sullivan and the strategic coach concept. It was to stop working on weaknesses and instead focus all the attention on strengths. So there was an acceptance of the fact that I'm terrible at most things. It sounds a little odd, right? But absolutely terrible at most things and extremely good at almost nothing, just a handful of things. And in the entrepreneur land, it turns out that's normal, completely normal. What you end up, once that was pointed out to me and it took a while to accept it, I don't do much of anything that isn't smack dab in my strengths. Other team members do that. And the most amazing thing is that we've got team members who can't wait to do things that I hate. Hate, not dislike, not am bothered by, but will put flaming bamboo under my fingernails instead of doing. And we have team members who just get up in the morning and be like, yeah, I can't wait to do that. I didn't know that was a thing up until recently in my business career. So what we end up doing is just bringing people to the table that take that stuff off of my plate and allow me to focus on only the things that I really get excited about doing. It sounds ridiculous, and I'm telling you that it is the biggest unlock you can imagine. It is just, it's a life happiness unlock.
I'm not going to say I disagree with you because I've not heard this before, but I want to just break it down for a minute, if that's okay. Philosophically speaking, it sounds like a fallacy to avoid working on things that you're weaker at because it assumes that your limitations might define your potential. And there's growth, the growth that you may have is in the process of trying to excel at something. So is there a counter argument to that actually also makes sense?
It's an extreme position. So extreme positions don't generally bear fruit all the way through. The counter to that is there are some things that you just can't be awful at and still be a productive human. So when I say weaknesses, what I'm describing there is when your weakness is bearable, not impossible, but bearable, stop there. When it works just well enough, stop there. And instead of trying to have extremely strong weaknesses, which no matter what you do, by the way, they'll never be anything but weaknesses. Focus on strengths. Throw a football analogy out there. Can a quarterback take people out like a linebacker? The answer is no. Why? The quarterback might not be 200 extra pounds, right? No matter what that quarterback does, he's not going to be the same person as that linebacker will be, and vice versa. The quarterback's going to focus on their strengths. The linebacker's going to focus on their strengths. In a business particular world, one of the things I'm good at is providing a vision, creating a vision. One of the things I'm terrible at is on the operational side. There's a book called Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman, where he separates the visionary from the integrator. And until I realized that I need an integrator to partner with, it was just very difficult to ever get anything off the ground. It's
Is
not who I am.
there a better way to reframe that is outsource your weaknesses? Because I don't know that I'm going to buy into the idea that you shouldn't at least spend some time trying
Minimal time,
to
yes.
improve. And I'm not arguing with you. I don't want to get into a whole debate on this because I do see the fallacy in my thoughts, but the whole idea of not focusing on your weaknesses, it also violates the principle of self-actualization for me.
What I'm describing is more of a business approach versus the personal side of things.
Okay.
There are things personally where, look, if you, let's say, for example, you just suck at relationships, then you roll into business and what are you going to do? Hire a shrink to walk around with you and pull you around on a leash all day long? No, that's not going to work. You have to improve that to the point where it doesn't, at least at a minimum, doesn't cause constant problems. On the other hand, I don't know that a person would ever be exceptional at that.
Fair enough. Let's agree on this piece of it and let's see if we can. Maturity for me in this process of dealing with this conundrum is knowing what to own, what to elevate, what to
Yes.
release. And it's not about necessarily becoming everything for all people. It's really about becoming fully yourself and understanding your strengths and weaknesses and outsourcing when and where applicable.
Yeah, and so if we flip the camera around on this a little bit from the perspective that I just illustrated, imagine you go from the lone wolf concept, and this is especially applicable to doctors because as a doctor, you're trained to be an expert on something, but society thinks you're an expert on everything. Nothing could be further from the truth. Okay. The extrapolation of the doctor title to I'm an expert on everything is done by all kinds of people, and it's just flat out wrong. So when you go through life training as a doctor, you think you're an expert on all kinds of stuff. And what you realize very quickly is you're absolutely not. And that's where bringing people in who are experts, who are fantastic at things that you're not, that's where life changed for me.
If everything were to disappear today, everything you've done, everything you've built, your family, your life, your friend, let's just say the mothership is hovering above your house and says, Dr. Michael Neal, your time is up. I'm ready to bring you to a different plane, different time,
Not again.
whatever you believe in. Yeah. If everything disappeared, what would you want to be remembered for?
Oh, but first off, having great kids that went out into the world and helped others big time in a scalable way, big help. That, and as a dude who helped people, I'm really into the service concept. I love helping people. It's who I am.
Yeah.
Whether it be one-on-one on the eye doctor side of things or with Build My Team, we get to help businesses help others at a scalable way. And that's really cool.
I talked at the outset before you even joined the call. I was doing an introduction on you, and one of the things I said in that, and it's what I tell my children all the time, is stop being a consumer all the time and be a creator. Provide
Oh.
value, serve in some way, shape, or form.
Amen.
Whether it's walking through the kitchen and seeing a sink full of dishes, or we have animals all over the house, some of them sometimes occasionally drop a bomb on the floor. If you see it, pick it up. Don't just leave it for mom and dad. Be a add value. Don't always just. You're not going to be able to make it through life very far if all you do is consume. You should be looking at it first. How can I serve and make the situation better in every moment? And I love that you just said
Yeah, if you're a human showing up to humanity as a black hole,
that.
just sucking everything, how far are you going to get?
I
Come on.
agree.
Like this is just somewhere you got to give your head a shake and say, this is just it's not going to work. No.
But for whatever reason, and I'm not denigrating your time period is better than my time period, and my time period is better than your time period. I'm not the old man who walked up the hill in the snow both ways. I'm simply saying that based upon my observations, and it may just be sheer wisdom because I'm way older than you, I see a sense of entitlement everywhere I go right now, that this should be handed to me. I should not have to work for it. I should be able to
Here we go.
instantaneously have whatever I want whenever I want. And I don't know where that came from other than children raising children and social media getting in the way of the constructs of who we can possibly be, the nuclear family being completely decomposed and deconstructed, and other people raising our children, whether it be in daycare, whether it be in school, prison for 8 hours a day. I don't see any other way that it could possibly have resulted. And I just quickly would wonder your opinion on that.
Oh, first of all, I am anaphylactically allergic to entitlement. I will bust out in hives like
You
nobody's
almost made me
business.
spit my coffee on the
Yeah,
camera.
anaphylactically allergic. Don't even come to me with any of that BS. No. It's just,
I'm going to
I want
quote you
none of
on
it.
this one. Hold
It,
on.
yeah, I am. I want none of it in my life. I got news for you. The world doesn't care. That's the hard reality of it. It doesn't care about you. It doesn't care about me. The world's going to keep spinning regardless of whether we have a great day or a bad day. And you, as I tell our kids, you're entitled to nothing. The world's going to give you nothing. You have to create the value for others in order to get it.
I love it.
So one of the things I started when they were about 4 or 5 years old was, how do you make money? It's easy, really simple. And everyone's, well, no, it's not. Yeah, you create value for others. You want more money, create more value. That's it. That is the equation. The other way to get money is through entitlements, where somebody gives it to you because you're entitled to it. That's complete garbage. It just, I have an extreme position on that. And you also mentioned the immediacy where everybody's expected to get everything right away. I don't know who said this, but it's almost impossible to get rich quick. Simultaneously, it's super easy to get rich slowly. And as far as the generations go, this is where I have some good news, some extremely good news. When we're looking at how Build My Team hires people, remember the entitlement, we have an assessment that precludes people who are entitled from moving on in the process, believe it or not, because they're awful for an organization. So it doesn't matter what the age is. Young people, especially, get an absolute awful rap for that. And it's because the ones who are entitled are so unbelievably vocal that you can only think that the entire generation's like that. It's not. There's all kinds of people who are amazing, but are painted by the wrong brush. And so when they go through our process, we get folks who can be 18 years old and A players. They have no clue that they are, they're completely unaware of the concept. But they can roll into an organization and make incredible contributions they don't even know. that that's a thing because they've had almost no work experience, that type of thing. So we do identify those people. They are there. Maybe are they as plentiful as before? I don't know, because I wasn't doing this before, like 10, 20 years ago. We started this in 2018, but they do exist. And they almost all want to contribute. They have to be in a position where they make a difference to the world. And this is great news. This is just isn't something that you see on the media or otherwise. But these people are there. They have to make a difference to the world. It's not all about money. It's about their contribution. If you what we do is we can isolate who those people are and then position them into these businesses, especially healthcare. It's so easy, where they show up for work every day and they can't help but change people's lives because it's the nature of what they do. Unbelievably rewarding. And those people stick in the business.
I don't disagree at all. I see them all the time. I certainly wasn't implying that every person in this generation
or of course
I'm just
not.
Simply saying that there is a strong, vapid existence of this sort of stuff. And I don't know where it came from other than what I described. So anyhow, sorry, go ahead.
The other part of that is you are 100% categorically correct in that. I'll give you an example. In the Build My Team process, we want as many applicants as possible into this process. So we essentially build a funnel where we pour as many applicants in as we can. We ask people, these applicants, to take action, to go through our assessments. We send them a link and it's extremely well worded and all that jazz. Guess what percentage of people actually click the link to start the process for a job they just applied to, and they get that link within 5 seconds of applying. What percentage actually click that link?
Less than five.
The good news, 50.
Wow, I did not expect
However,
that.
The other side of it is you lose 50% of the people who applied for a job 5 seconds ago because you asked them to take an action. So those are the people that you were describing. They're not going to take an action because they got to put their Xbox controller down. They just don't want to get off the couch. They want somebody to pay them for doing as little work as possible. Yeah, bad news for a business. And there's no way to identify those folks in an interview process. That's why one of the core value that we provide is to isolate those people and just, they do not move on in the process. They are eliminated from being potentially hired.
Interesting. We're going to close out here shortly, but in your process of vetting these ideal candidates, have you ever heard of the concept of Enneagrams?
Yeah, we don't use that stuff.
I'm just curious if you implied that.
It's completely based upon strengths and talents and we got some secret sauce built into the equation, and then simply some logistical items like how far they are away from the business, that type of thing. And remember, we didn't create this based upon HR rules, HR this, HR that. We created it upon getting the best possible candidates for an extremely narrow job type position. And we, of course, had it vetted by HR attorneys and all the rest of that, but we didn't go through a traditional approach. And that's why we get those results that are completely different.
I love that. You were talking about sort of the type of person that ideally you're looking for. And we're talking about our children and this brand that you've built. And you said something that really struck out at me. And I just wrote down a note here. It says, find a problem. We were talking about like, how do you show up in the world? And you said, come up with the served capacity. And one of the things that I just wrote as you were talking about that is, if you want to run a business, if you want to have some modicum of success, if you want to launch whatever your brand is, right? Whatever that could be, find a problem, create a solution, determine how to deliver this solution to the people who actually need it. And you have a business. Agree, disagree?
Yeah. And let's remember that no part of that program is easy, but it is how value is delivered.
Yeah, it really is. Man, this has been a good show. I appreciate your time and your insights and your wisdom.
It's so much fun, Devo.
Yeah, it has been a good show. I appreciate you, Doc. If people want to find you, drop that for us, and we'll put this in the show notes. So, of course, anyone listening, just scroll down. You'll see it right here, but just real quickly, tell me.
Yeah, good news. I'm not in witness protection, so very easy to find. Buildmyteam.com. That's all you got to do. Schedule a free consultation, and you'll be able to talk to us. And just be honest. Tell our team members exactly what's going on in your business, exactly who you're looking for. And we're only going to move forward with you if we can help you.
Have you ever thought about building a model into your business that actually, I don't want to use the word franchises, but you help other practitioners, whether they're dentists or optometrists, actually build a system like you've built and introduce this into their own practice?
Not Not necessarily, because our service is very affordable. Like, we have clients that we've worked with since 2016, and we just handle all of their hiring.
No, that's
So
not where I'm
it,
going. Not the hiring
no.
space, not to interrupt you. You've built something. It sounds like it's working. It sounds like you have a good head on your shoulders. It sounds like you have your own successful business. Have you ever thought as your exit strategy to replicate your model and then teach other people, optometrists, dentists, doctors, whomever they want to build a private practice, how to replicate that model and then giving them, they buy the model from you?
That's a fascinating idea.
And you serve as, just to borrow the franchise concept, they would buy the program from you, and then you serve in a certain capacity of implementing that until they're up on their feet, and then you could have scale that with other programs and recertifications or whatever. As you evolve that business, they also evolve with you, but then you have that direct symbiotic connection, and now you're building a collaborative community around your ecosystem.
I think that would be fantastic because that would help change people's opinions as to how to hire. The resume-based approach of hiring is simply broken. It's only used because that's what people have without a better approach. And what we've demonstrated with the strengths and talents approach, it's so superior. I cannot even imagine going back.
Back to the outset of the call, you have an obligation to share that in some way, shape, or form, but I also believe that you should earn revenue off of that because you are building something, creating something. So it's not just how to hire. I think if you figured out a solution how to run your clinic better, and part of that clinic is the fact that you hire better because you've understood that surrounding yourself with talented and community-driven people is one of the keys to success. Could you build a model around not only how to hire, but how to run a clinic based upon the philosophies that you instill in your own, and then practitionally sell that to somebody who also wants to open up an optometrist or a dental office or whatever it may be?
Yeah, as a framework for how to run the business. That's interesting. I'd have to ask the team because they're the ones that run the business. I don't. And I'm not exaggerating that. They are left to drive the bus and achieve the goals that are set out for them.
That's all good, but you're still behind the curtain. You're still the man behind the curtain. So, anyway, we should talk about that if you're interested. I think you would be a perfect candidate for doing something like that. It might be a good exit strategy for you. Anyhow,
Fascinating.
if today's episode challenged you in any way, shape, or form, how you think about branding or how you think about leadership or your own evolution, because we've talked a lot about who you are as an individual, please reach out. We'd love to have you as a guest on the show. And Dr. Michael Neal, if you know of anybody who would make a great guest for the show, would enjoy a conversation of this nature, please introduce us. It would be fantastic to have that mutual introduction. So I really
All
appreciate your
means.
time for coming out today and spending an hour and almost an hour and a half with me. Thank you. And I look forward to sharing the show with you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Devo.
Yeah, man. If you are a founder, if you are a creator, if you are an individual or a leader that is trying to build something bold, something true, something innovative, something authentic, something that serves other people, that solves a problem that they have, this show was made for you. And I hope you listen to some of the things that Dr. Michael Neal and I discuss, because there's a lot of grains of wisdom in that, not from me, from him, that I think you can use in your daily life and how you show up. Again, I appreciate you as always for being a listener to this podcast. I know you have opportunities and other choices to and other shows to listen to. So the fact that you just gave me an hour of your time is very humbling and appreciative. And I just wanted to share that with you. Until next time, please stay curious, stay courageous, and keep becoming the individual, the brand, the business, the person you were born to be. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.